I know that one teacher had said to someone, "Oh, I don't believe in warming up. You don't need to warm up." And that really, really bothered me. And normally I will never comment on another teacher because my feeling is if I haven't been in their studio and watched them, I really don't know what's going on. So it might sound absurd to me, and yet they may be getting great results. You know, so I usually don't comment. But when I heard that, I couldn't keep my mouth shut. And I just said, that is completely bull. It's just bull. I just thought that was the most ridiculous and very, very dangerous advice to somebody because you can really injure your voice.
Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is singing coach of the Stars, Eric Vitro. Eric has a client list that's a who's who of music celebrities, including Ariana Grande, Katy Perry, Rita Ora, John Legend, and Shawn Mendes, as well as the lead singers from bands like Haim, Weezer, Incubus, and Muse. He's also trained A-list actors for movie musicals La La Land, Chicago, Judy, Mary Poppins Returns, Hairspray, Beauty and the Beast, Cinderella, and Wicked, among many others. Plus, he's worked with many Disney stars who went on to have singing careers such as Vanessa Hudgens, Sabrina Carpenter, Ashley Tinsdale, and Dove Cameron. During the interview, we spoke about his unique coaching style, how his background as a piano accompanist made him a better coach, getting a movie star ready to sing in a movie, why warming up your voice is so important, and much more. I spoke with Eric from his home in Los Angeles.
They didn't require headphones, so...
Well, you don't have to use them here either, but, you know, we're here, it works, so, let's carry
okay.
on. Cool. All right. So you have a lot of amazing clients, Ariana Grande, Katy Perry, Rita Ora, bands like Weezer and Incubus, and on, Disney performers, Broadway performers, just an amazing list. What I'm curious is, what do these clients of yours have in common? Is there one thing that you can say, hey, there's a commonality either in something that they need from you, they need to learn, or, you know, maybe something I'm not thinking of?
Well, there is no one common goal because, I mean, I guess the common goal would be that they all want to improve. They all want to get better. So that would be the common goal. But I think that each one comes for a different reason. Like I work with a lot of actors who have not sung very much, who get a role in a movie where they have to sing, you know, like movies like Elvis or a movie with Angelina Jolie coming up, Maria, you know, about the opera singer Maria Callas, things like that. So they want to get their voice in shape for that. Timothée Chalamet for Wonka first, and then we worked on the one that's coming out, A Complete Unknown, about Bob Dylan. And then some are pop singers who want to strengthen their voice to be able to do a long world tour. I mean, that can be 125, 135 dates, you know, in 1 year, performing, flying all over the world. So those people usually want to improve their voice, but also want to be able to have sustainability, be able to sustain their voice in the best possible way. So a lot of times they come for vocal health. Some people come to increase their range so they can sing higher notes and lower notes. Some to improve their tone. So each person really comes with something special to work on. Or sometimes people just come and say, I want to work on my voice. I just want to take voice lessons. I've never done it. And then I get to determine what I think they need.
That's a good place to go right there. Since you've worked with so many amazing clients that already come to you that have, you know, great voices, do you get kind of spoiled with that? And that if you have to work with someone that really is kind of a beginner doing this?
No, you know, it's funny you ask that because the truth is, everybody that comes to me has certain challenges, you know, that go along with it. And so some person, it might be they have old bad habits. Some person, it might be they have no habits. They have no idea what they're doing. Some people with a very limited range, some people with limited potential, some people with great potential. I just look at it as all exciting and challenging. And so if it was all the same, I think I would get bored. But the fact that it's all different makes it really exciting. So if I work with 8 different singers in a day, let's say I do 8 one-hour sessions in a day, which happens quite frequently, each person is going to need something a little bit different. Some people, it's more pop music. Some people might be Broadway. Some people getting people ready to go to Broadway. Some people, like when Lea Michele was doing Funny Girl all year, we would do a lesson every single week, warm up, do a lesson, work on the music, sometimes several times a week. Everybody's different. You know, if it's an actor who's never sung before, that's a big challenge to get them to sing in a big movie musical, but that's exciting to me. I've done it enough times now that I don't doubt myself. In the beginning, I probably was a little like, oh, I hope I can make this work. Now I've done it so many times, I don't have any fear about it or any doubts about it. I just really pay attention. You know, when someone comes into my studio, I don't judge them as good or bad. I just think, what is it they need to improve? What is it we need to work on? So that's all I'm thinking about, is what exercises are going to help, what advice is going to help this person, and that's what I'm always formulating in my mind. But I love it that it's all different people, different levels, different, you know, genres, all of that.
Okay, so let's just hypothetically say there's an actor that comes in that really hasn't sung too much, and there's a timeline that they have. They have to be ready by a certain date. Mm-hmm. There's only so much, I would think, that you could do in a short period of time to get them ready. Or is there a fast track somehow?
Well, that really depends on how short of a timeline you're talking about. yeah. Usually I have enough time. I mean, there's never been a time when I really felt like I didn't have enough time. There's been times when I felt rushed. Like, oh my God, I really got to like kick ass on this one. I got to start right away. You know, if someone has a long period of time, then I can gradually ease them into singing, ease them into some vocal exercises, talk about singing, talk about the character. If it's a shorter timeline, we have to just get going right away on it. But I just formulate in my head. I always say, give me the hard numbers. You know, when do they have to be ready? When are they going to go in the studio? When are they going to either pre-record, or when are they going to sing live for filming? And then I just put all of my effort into getting them as prepared as I can by that time. And, you know, sometimes you feel a little bit more rushed. And I might say, we need to do several times a week. I might say we need to do four times the first 2 weeks because we only have a couple weeks. Or I might say every day, 5 days a week. If we have a long period of time, as in the case with Angelina Jolie for Maria, we had 7 months, basically. So we didn't have to jam pack it, although we did work several times a week, but we didn't have to. It never felt rushed to me. Whereas if it's down to 1 month, I might go, all right. And recently I did a job where we basically had 2.5 weeks. But the person was already a pretty good singer, so all I was doing was really helping them interpret the music, how could they sound the best on it, and help them hit the higher notes, because that was the challenge, the high notes. So we worked on that. But I just take it as it comes to me. Like I said, I've done this so many times now that I never panic about it. I always go, we're going to get it done. I know we're going to get it done. I know we'll accomplish it.
Well, that in itself probably makes it so much easier for the client.
Probably, because they see I'm not panicked, I'm not worried. They yeah. might be worried, but if they see I'm calm and I reassure them and say, you can do this, we're going to make this work, trust me. I say, I've done this so many times, I know we can make this work.
I'm curious about, again, let's say a less accomplished singer that maybe has some ability, fairly new to doing this, but it's not that they don't have the range. What they're asked to do is beyond what they can do. What do you do? In other words, they're being written for beyond what their voice can do.
Well, so far that has not happened. So I'm not quite sure what I would do. However, some of them have been very challenging. You know, when someone has never sung a note and then they're asked to sing opera, or they've never sung a note and then asked to sing a Broadway song, like in Into the Woods, that was difficult music, Stephen Sondheim. You know, so that's a challenge. But once again, I've just done it so many times that I kind of have this confidence that I know I can get them there. I just know I'm going to be able to do it. And maybe there's a little magic in that. I don't know. But I feel like I know every trick in the book. I feel like I know every possible technique we can use to get them to where they need to be. And so far, Bobby, that has not happened. I hope it doesn't happen. And if it ever does happen, I'll call you and let you know, and we can do another podcast about it.
Yeah.
But I hope it doesn't. You know,
I was reading up on your background mm-hmm. prior to doing this, and there was a lot of references to your unique coaching style, which I would imagine is this approach that you have where you're not panicking, you feel that you can get it done no matter what.
Well, you know, also, when I lived in New York and I went to school at NYU, I took some classes at Juilliard, the adult classes at night, but I was at NYU. I started when I was 20, I guess, at NYU, 19 or 20. And what I did was, because I could play the piano, I was very lucky. I've played the piano since I was very young, like around 5 years old. So I started playing the piano for other people's lessons. I even played for the choir. I didn't realize I was going to get paid for it at the time. I thought I was just doing it because it was either fun for the choir, or I thought, oh, I'm going to learn from these other teachers. When I started getting checks, I was shocked. I didn't know what was happening, why this was happening. But anyway, I would play for a lot of people's lessons, their singing lessons, because their teachers couldn't play. And I learned so much. So I say, in essence, even if I went to 5 or 6 different voice teachers myself, paying for those lessons myself, I learned from another 15 teachers because I was there in on the lessons, accompanying the students. And so I think I learned so much from all those teachers about how everything can be accomplished, or anything, let me say that, anything can be accomplished. And so I learned so many different approaches that I've had that inside of me for so many years that, you know, I've always said, I don't believe in someone using one technique and that's it, because not every technique works on every person. And that drives me crazy if I hear a teacher go, oh, I teach this so-and-so technique, that's what I do. And I think to myself, well, then you're going to have some success with some people, but you're not going to have success with everyone, because everyone's voice is so different and everyone's background and history is different and everyone's challenges are different. So you have to be very, very flexible to hear what they need. Like, as a teacher, that's the most important quality, I think, or one of the most important qualities, to be able to hear exactly what they need and then to be flexible to do whatever it is that person needs. The person who's standing in front of you at that moment, they might need something that seems kind of wacky and crazy and silly, but if I get a sense that that's what they need and my intuition tells me that, or it's something I've seen before, I go with that and I don't stick with any one technique. So I feel like my method of teaching comes from 20 different techniques, you know, or 20 different teachers. And so I think that that's really important. So I think when people say I teach with a unique technique, I think that's, they don't realize it, but that's what it is. I'm being very, very flexible to whatever the person needs.
So in your experience, Eric, with all of these other voice teachers through the years, was there ever a technique that you went, or just an approach that someone was taking that you went, not going to do that?
You know, not that I actually worked with one-on-one. I've heard of a few things that I usually or sometimes think, that's not for me. You know, I know that one teacher had said to someone, oh, I don't believe in warming up. You don't need to warm up. And that really, really bothered me. And normally I will never comment on another teacher, because my feeling is, if I haven't been in their studio and watched them, I really don't know what's going on. So it might sound absurd to me, and yet they may be getting great results, you know? So I usually don't comment. But when I heard that, I couldn't keep my mouth shut. And I just said, that is completely bull. It's just bull. I just thought that was the most ridiculous and very, very dangerous advice to somebody, because you can really injure your voice. You can get a vocal hemorrhage. You've got to prepare your voice, especially when you're going on a big tour or you're doing Broadway, 8 shows a week. Your vocal cords have to have a lot of stamina. They have to have strength and stamina, and you need to know what you're doing in order to maintain your voice. You know, now some people are very, very lucky. There's very few of them, but there are people who are lucky with born with just very, very strong, healthy vocal cords. Just like there's certain athletes that are born with a certain muscle strength or certain coordination. However, I still say everyone should learn technique. And I always use the example, if you go to a boxing match, The coach is right there, right during the middle of the boxing match, right? Or you go to a golfing match and there's the coach right there giving the golfer, you know, instructions or notes. So it's the same thing with your voice.
Are you ever asked to come to the studio and someone is recording?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite often.
So you become the vocal producer.
Well,
so
yes and no. I'm very cautious about that because a lot of vocal producers don't want a voice teacher there to do that because they are there. So, and I honor that. I feel like they have a right. That's their domain. And if they've written that song or co-written that song and they know how they want it to go, I don't want to push my agenda on them or what I think is right, my taste. So what I always say to everybody is if the artist asks me to come or the manager asks me to come, I'll say to whoever is running the recording session, I'll say, look, I'm here to help out. If they're having trouble reaching a high note or if they're having trouble achieving what it is you want, I'll step in. I'll be glad to help and I'll help you achieve what you want. But I'm not going to offer my taste or I'm not going to offer my suggestions if you're not looking for them because I don't want to step on your toes. And they really appreciate that. I was just in the studio on Monday and it was the same thing. I just held back because the person running the session obviously knew what he wanted. And after about an hour, I was like, I'm totally unneeded here. I'm totally not necessary. But I warmed up the person. I got them in a good, healthy placement. Their voice sounded good. So my job was done.
A mentor of mine, Nashville producer, used to talk about the three P's in vocal production: pitch, pocket, passion.
Okay.
Which makes a lot of sense, and it does work when you're trying to speak with the vocalist. Mm-hmm. Pitch and pocket are kind of technical, so that's easy to do somewhat, but passion is difficult to pull that out of a lot of people.
It is. So I use all sorts of things when I feel like I need to. For example, I always will recommend to someone that they write an essay. This is before they get in the studio, before they even get into rehearsal. They write an essay, why I wrote this song. Even if they didn't write the song, you know, even if it's a cover tune of someone else, why I wrote the song. So they really get in touch with it. Like, who is the person you're talking about? Let's say the song's about a lost love. Who is that person? Everyone's basically gone through some relationship of loss, whether it's the loss of a partner, loss of a love, loss of a pet, loss of a parent. You can use anything. And I always say, take the one that really affects you the most or really, really weighs heavy on your heart, that really broke your heart, and now let's use that in the song. Or maybe it's a song about a new love, fresh, exciting, you're in that honeymoon period. You know, either use the person you're with right now or go back and revisit a time when you felt like that. What were those feelings like? What did you feel? Really try to relive it so you can reignite that sensation in your body. And then usually when people do that, then the song becomes more personal to them and the passion flows. If they're just singing a lyric that doesn't really connect with them, like they might go, oh, I want to sing it because it's a beautiful melody, or oh, this song really fits my voice, or the record label wants me to sing this song. I say, yeah. Well, then let's figure out a way that we can really connect your soul to it, your heart to it. And with some people, I'll actually have them. I was working on a lullaby CD many years ago that I co-produced, actually. And the singer was having trouble really feeling it. But she happened to be a mom. So I was like, do you have any pictures of your kids? Well, of course, who wouldn't have pictures of their kids? She pulled out the pictures of her kids. As soon as she did that and sang the lullaby to her kids in the picture right in front of her, it changed everything. It was beautiful.
Let's go back to warming up for a second. Is there like a one size fits all for warming up?
No.
For your client?
Absolutely
it's all,
not.
It's different.
Yeah. I mean, there are very similar things you can do. So in that sense, it might be one size fits all. Like, I'll give you an example. I do a lot of things. Some people like to call them slides. I call them slides. Some people call them sirens because they sound like sirens. Some people call them roller coasters because it's like a vocal roller coaster. So an example would be, so I start with those right at the top of almost every lesson with everyone. Not 100% of the time, but I would say 80 to 85% of the time because people react very well to them. Now, how high or how low though people go, that's where it starts becoming tailored. So some people I might start very small. Then go a little higher. He. Then even higher. He. You see what I mean? And then, depending on how their voice is reacting, if I can hear this is working, they're sounding better, they're getting, I can tell that they're enjoying it and feeling good, then I'll do extra ones. I might do 5-10 minutes of slides. If they're not quite getting it, it's not really working, or I can sense they're a little uncomfortable, I'll move on and do something else. So yes, I have things that I really like to use every time when I start a lesson, but I don't force anyone into anything that's not working for them. You know, it has to work for them.
And this is something that you recommend they do every time before they sing them.
Yeah, and I make recordings for everyone to work with. And that's why on my BBC Maestro series...
we're going to get to that.
Yeah, I have 54 exercises for basses, tenors, and baritones, and I have 54 for sopranos and altos. And I have beginner, intermediate, and advanced. So there's a lot of exercises, but I do start with those slides with everybody because I do think they are really, really valuable.
If you're tired of your mixes coming out muddy, thin, or lifeless, I have great news. You can take the quality of your mixes from amateur to pro level using the techniques of the world's top mixers. I'll show you these quick solutions to 15 common mix problems with my Mix Fix playbook. Go to go.bobbyosinski.com/mixfix to check it out now. How did you become a vocal coach?
Oh, I mean, this question is, all right, I'll tell you, but I think a lot of people think to themselves, what in the world could he possibly be talking about? But the truth is, I have been doing this my entire life. In the very beginning, not knowing I was doing it, I was always obsessed with people singing. I was obsessed with playing the piano. I have a cousin who reminds me all the time that I was critiquing her when she was 6 years old, telling her that she was singing a Christmas carol wrong. Those are the wrong notes. You can't sing it like that. This is the right way. And so I look back and I go, I kind of remember that. And I kind of remember being irritated that she was singing the wrong notes and telling her. But it just went from there. When I was in the third or fourth grade, I said to my grade school teacher, who could not play the piano very well at all, I said, I can play the Star Spangled Banner. I can play America the Beautiful. And she said, you can? And I said, yeah. And I showed her. And the very next day, she made an announcement, said, from now on, Eric Vitro is going to play, you know, America the Beautiful, Star Spangled Banner. And I do remember the moment that happened. I felt like, wow, like, I felt important. It somehow seemed very important, like I was going to stand out in some way. Because I wasn't standing out in other ways. But all of a sudden, I felt like, ooh, it gave me an identity. I didn't word it that way. I didn't articulate it that way. But I got an identity from it, and that was it. It just kept going from there. Kids would come to me. I'd teach them songs. All the kids in my neighborhood, one of them especially, had a really nice piano at their house. I would go to her house. I'd play. She would sing. Then when I was in high school, I played the piano for the high school musicals. So I sort of took over and started teaching the kids the songs. So it wasn't just the teacher doing it, but I could do it in my spare time. I would do it. So it just kept going and going and going and going. I'm doing the same thing now on a better level, higher level. And I will say this, I enjoy it more now than I ever, ever have in my entire life. Every year I enjoy it more. I'm so grateful for that.
But you were a performer for a while, right?
Yes, but I kind of half-heartedly became a performer. I thought I wanted to do it, but then when I actually did it, I didn't enjoy it. You know, I just didn't enjoy it. There was a opera company in Manhattan called the Light Opera of Manhattan, Loom, L-O-O-M, Light Opera of Manhattan, and or something like Light Opera something of Manhattan. Anyway, I did a couple operettas with them, Gilbert and Sullivan operettas, and I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy being on stage. I had a little bit of stage fright. I got nervous. I was stressed out. However, in my spare time, instead of working on my own music, I was always helping the other cast members, you know. I would help them, like they would go, oh, I'm having trouble with this low note. I'd say, oh, well, my teacher told me this, or, oh, someone showed me that. And so I realized after about, I don't know, a couple years, well, this is what I want to do. I don't want to do this other thing. I'm not cut out for it. And, you know, I still say to people all the time, you have to love this. You have to want it so bad. There's nothing else in your life you want to do. because it is a difficult business. It's a tough business. There's way too little work for way too many people. And so I say, unless you just love it so much that you can't imagine doing anything else, and you also have to be the person who's going to be happy doing whatever level you're doing, whether it's dinner theater, whether it's, you know, on a college campus, a little tiny black box theater, whatever it is, if you love it, then do it. But if you don't, if you're just in it for stardom and fame, if you're just in it because you want to sing at Staples Center or the Rogers Center in Toronto or wherever, Wembley Stadium, you better just look for something else, because the chances of that are quite small. And you know, people say, but all of your people have done those things. And I go, yeah, but they've been very lucky and they worked really hard and either had an exceptional talent or had some, you know, worked really, really hard to get there. But not everyone's going to get there. There's not enough days in the year for everybody who wants to do this to perform at places like that.
What was your first paid coaching job? It's one thing to be doing it for free and doing it, you know, as you did, but at some point you become a pro.
Well, it happened in two different ways. I guess as far as coaching, yeah, that's true. Because I got play the piano a couple times. But as far as getting coached, there was a student at NYU, one of my in my grade, one of my classmates, who said to me one day, I'm having trouble with this aria. My recital is coming up. Could you help me? He said, Amy, who is my friend Amy Niles, who was in our class also, said that, you know, she pays you by feeding you. I can't do that, but I could pay you with money. And I went, feeding me? And I realized I used to go to her apartment and I would help her, and her grandmother lived there. They had a spectacular apartment, by the way, on Riverside Drive across the street from Gracie Mansion, where the mayor lived. And her father had this beautiful apartment. Her grandmother lived there. And so we would rehearse. She had a baby grand piano in her bedroom, and we would rehearse. I would help her, and then her grandmother would serve us dinner. I thought they just invited me to be nice. I didn't realize she thought she was paying me with dinner. So this, my classmate said, I'll give you money. And I was like, oh, all right, sure. I would have done it, by the way, even if he hadn't offered me money. And he either gave me $10 or $15. I think it was $10 for the hour. And that was it. So that would have been my first real paid-to-coach job. And then other kids started doing it. Then all of a sudden somebody else, I don't know how I even met them, who was going to sing in a nightclub, asked me if I would work with them. And then it just kept going and going and going. You know, word of mouth is pretty exciting. But this is what I always say to anybody in any business. If you throw yourself 100% into it and you do your very best job with everybody, because you want to help them, you want to do your best job, you want a good reputation. If you do that, your word of mouth will be great. It's as simple as that. And you'll get a lot of work. If you do a great job, you'll get a lot of work. If you phone it in, if you're lazy, then you won't get a lot of work.
Let me ask you this question, and I know this bothers me. If I have my studio ears on and I happen to listen to a recording where the singer is not quite, the singer is a little pitchy, it drives me crazy. Does that happen to you?
Well, I don't enjoy it, that's for sure.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I don't like that either. As a matter of fact, I think my belief is, people can get away with a lot. They cannot get away with singing out of tune. I think that people are accepting of a raspy voice, maybe a little hoarse voice, a little tired, sometimes someone not being as energetic as they wish they were in a concert. But nobody wants to hear people sing out of tune. That is the one thing that I think probably bothers most people. Now, you maybe have a better ear, so it bothers even more, and it might be grating on you. But I think that's the one, it's in my course, I actually say it's the one unforgivable thing. Nobody will forgive out-of-tune singing.
Now, the funny thing is, with auto-tune, it's kind of gone the other way, where everything is too perfect and it doesn't sound real, it doesn't sound natural.
I know. It's finding the right balance, you know?
Yeah.
It's just finding the right balance. Don't overdo it. Do it just enough to help. Now, I know somebody who has perfect pitch. You could like clink a glass and he can tell you what note it is. but he actually sings with live autotune when he performs, because he said, it doesn't mean I can always sing perfectly in tune. It just means I can hear. And so he said, if I hear myself go out of tune, I go crazy. So he uses the autotune just because he can't stand listening to himself go out of tune. But once again, like I said, it's always a matter of balance, how much you're using.
Let's talk about your course on BBC Maestro. So how did that come about?
Okay, and I'm just going to spell it because everyone always says, how do you spell it? It's BBC Maestro, bbcmaestro.com. It came about, someone from the company called me and started telling me about it and described it. You know, they said Mark Ronson did the one on music production. Then they said Sir Tim Rice did the one on lyric writing, you know, the brilliant lyricist, Tim Rice.
Sure. Yeah.
And by the way, everything else became a blur. I was like, all he had to say was Mark Ronson or Sir Tim Rice. That's all I needed to hear. I'm in, like totally in. And I said, you know, but in my head I was thinking, well, maybe I should just play along, ask a few questions, don't act too excited, you know. I mean, like, oh, well, let me mull it over. Let me think about it. But I was like immediately, because I am not an entrepreneurial person. I have never reached out to do something like that. I've never tried to create a course like that. I've never taught an actual master class because my feeling was, you know, let's say you do a class and it's Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. Well, what happens when one of my students has a big recording session and they want me there? Or what happens if someone's doing a concert and they want me to go warm them up for the concert down at Staples Center? I can't tell this whole class now, oh, sorry, I'm going to go warm up. So I just always put it out of my head and thought, well, that's just not for me. That's for teachers who want to do that or want to just work with a class. This, though, however, was very, very, very appealing because I thought, oh, once it's done, it's done. And then it's out there for people. And believe it or not, people have been coming up to me, strangers who I've never met. Recently at the Sabrina Carpenter concert at the Kia Forum, this young girl came over to me and said, oh my God, you're Eric Vitro, right? You're the voice teacher. I bought your course on BBC Maestro. I love it. My friends are already telling me my voice has improved. I can already hear it. That was, I cannot tell you the sense of joy I had from that, because here's this person I've never met before, but I've given her something, you know, I've helped her with something that was important to her. And so that was just like the most gratifying feeling. I can't even describe it.
Now, I'm not going to say it's a problem, but the challenge that you must have had is, since what you do is so custom to everybody, now you have to come up with something that sort of fits everybody.
That was a huge challenge, but What I did to really minimize that as much as possible is, on every exercise, I say, if it feels too low, don't sing any lower. If it feels too high, just stop and go on to the next exercise. And then I remind them that as time goes on, their range will increase, so they will be able to go higher and lower. Then I say, if it feels comfortable to go lower than I'm playing it on the piano, go ahead. If it feels comfortable to go higher, knock yourself out, do it. But don't do it if you're straining. So I do it with a lot of caveats, you know, when I do it. I try to tell them all of the things I would be saying to somebody that was in front of me. Because at this point, I know there are a lot of similar things. At certain areas of someone's range, they have to think a little thinner, a little more narrow to get into the higher upper register. There are certain things I can have people do physically that relax them. So I really pulled in all of the years of teaching, which is by now about 100. I pulled in all of those years of teaching and thought, what are the most common things I'm saying to people all the time? Where in their range does it present to be the most difficult or challenging? And so I put all of that into the course.
How does a student get around thinking too much about what you're telling them? So, because I would think if you think too much about it, then you're forgetting about other things that are important.
Yep, that's a very, very important aspect of all of this. One of the ways, and there's many different things you can work with someone on, but one of the things that I do, well, I told you already how I tell them to write an essay. I like them to fill their heads with a lot of information about the song. For example, it might be answering questions. When you sing this song, are you singing it at night or day? Is the room dim? Is it candlelit? So now they've got an image in their mind of a candlelit room that's maybe more romantic, if the song is romantic. Then I say, you know, picture that person in front of you, so you're singing it to that person. Well, now more of their mind is now taken up with that person who's in front of them. You know, what is it you want to accomplish with this person? What is it you want to say to them? What do you want them to feel? What do you want them to walk away with? Now even more of their mind is taken up with all of that. So what it does is it crowds out all the other things, like, I'm not good enough. I'm not sounding good. I shouldn't be doing this. I wish I had practiced more. Or, you know, it could go the opposite. I'm really great, which that's not so hot either.
Yeah, right.
So I always say, you know, let's fill your head with all the things that will help you. And that will start to push out, crowd out all those other voices, because you don't know, those things aren't going to help. So we don't want any of that. We try to eliminate those thoughts.
Last question, Eric. Mm-hmm. And thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. It's so nice to meet you.
So happy to speak with
you
today.
I'm happy to speak with you.
What's the best piece of advice that maybe somebody imparted to you or you learned along the way?
Oh, there's been several. There was a very successful actor at one time that I met, and he said, I can't tell anyone what the secret to success is, but I can tell you what the secret to failure is, and that's trying to please everyone, because you're never going to be able to please everyone. So he said, I always say to people, create something you would want to see, and there's going to be other people who are going to want to see it. So I took that for me as work on people to improve their voice, bring out their biggest potential, their, you know, take them to the highest level they can vocally, keeping their unique voice. Because if you do that, there are going to be people who love that unique voice, and then there's going to be other people who don't. But we can't try to please everyone. We have to just do the very best we can with what we have. And so I always thought that was a really great piece of advice. And then someone else said to me many, many years ago, hard work pays off. I thought that was a really great quote. And then the other one was, I started writing a book at one time and I never finished it, but I was interviewing people who were very successful. And Tom Hanks was somebody I interviewed because I knew Tom and he agreed to do it. And he was so gracious, as he always is. And I mean, he's an amazing human being. And one of the things he said that really stuck with me was, and he was talking about more with acting, but it definitely applies to singing. He said, you cannot be self-conscious and perform at your highest level. You cannot be watching yourself, judging yourself, critiquing yourself as you perform. You must let go of all of that. And so that's what I try to do, is find ways of getting people to stop critiquing themselves as they're performing. And I'll give you one other one. Stephen Schwartz, the great composer who wrote Wicked, which is coming out tomorrow in the movies, is a friend of mine. And he used to have a great story that he had written all those great musicals like Pippin and Godspell and, you know, all of them. But at one point in his life, he found that he had what he thought was writer's block. And he called a friend of his who was also a writer and told him, and his friend said, oh, I can fix this in 1 minute. I know exactly what's happened to you. You became the critic too soon. You're critiquing yourself as you write. You have to just write, let it go, and then go back and you can change. And so I've always thought about that too, that I thought that was really great advice. You cannot critique yourself when you're in the process of creating. And that would be for singing, when you're in the process of singing, vocalizing. So I say to people, record yourself, then go back and listen. Then you can critique it and go, oh, this could be better. And then do it again. Record yourself again. Then go back and listen again.
That's excellent. Well, that's gold, actually. Wonderful. Every one of those golden nuggets are great.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, dynamite. Thank you so much, Eric.
Well, Bobby, this was a pleasure. Nice meeting you.
Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news, and find out about openings for my latest online classes at bobbyosinski.com. This is Bobby Osinski. I'll see you next time.